We're back with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for another Tacky Talk. How's it going, Tacky?
Hey Joe, I have voice again. So that's a positive thing. You may still hear a little bit of a cough here and there. The grass pollen, I think, is starting to move by, but particulates are still very in the air. So I'm hearing from folks who normally don't get allergies also having a mild cough. And it's less about your antihistamines and more just about increased particles. That's all.
Yeah, it is spring in New England, that's for sure. So that's the only good sign of all the rain we've had. It kind of washes it down a little bit.
It does help. It also blooms some trees. Although a couple of my plants around the house has been around here longer than I've been in this house, seems to have some struggling. Not sure what's going on, but the rain does not help my yard work. As I'm like everybody else, I'm looking at my grass reaching my knees and getting seriously concerned about what my options are. I'm actually probably going to just weed whack them a little bit at a time. Forget trying to use the mower right off the bat. Just kind of just trim down the tops and. Because as the winter, all of us have been dealing with a lot of fallen branches. I mean, I got fire pit material, and normally I kind of wait till the fall when it's not cold, but a little more mild. I just crank up the fire pit, burn some more wood, and then bring some friends over, and it's therapeutic for some reason.
And you can have s'mores.
It's a COVID thing, very strange, but I think we have to crank out the fire pit earlier because the amount of debris, around my house is very high. It's not just my own trees, it's whatever blows around from neighbors' yards.
Ah, yes, the perils of living along the coastline and getting those strong winds right off the water.
Well, last Thursday was pretty wicked. And we'll see how this weekend goes. It's not supposed to be as bad, but we have an overnighter. Today's Wednesday, the 28th. So we'll see an overnight tonight, and there's supposed to be another pretty rough storm on Saturday.
Yes, the trend continues these Saturdays. It's tough to get any of these events in, that's for sure.
Well, as you all may be aware, I mean, I do bounce around all over the place. As the warmer weather comes, we have considerably more events to attend to, even if it's just being there for 30 minutes. I do try to avoid sit-down dinners. As many of you know, at this point, I have food allergies as long as my arm. So it gets a little tiresome. But some of the stuff in life, it gets hard is the yard work component, to be honest with you. It's always been the big struggle. To just keep up with it. And as some of you also know, I say over and over again, I mean, I keep dropping my dry cleaning off whenever I can, pick up when I can, hit the, on the CVS and the pass through from either from work from the state house or onto the state house or between events in the city, as well as, doing my grocery shopping when it's the quietest period of time to try to get in and out the fastest period of time because I just don't have time to linger. Especially you got a weekend event, you try to do the pass through, and you all know what the supermarket's like on certain weekends in particular. Sometimes it's easier just to get in there on like a Tuesday morning and just whip through the market and get out. You sometimes miss out obviously on things that are being restocked, but it is get it done when you can get it done.
Speaking of the State House, what's going on there lately?
Well, the Senate did their budget last week, so this week is actually the quiet week because we're waiting for the conference committee to be formed between the House and the Senate. And we passed a small supplemental budget, the House did, which has been sent to the Senate, which is the governor's request for some funding. Basically, we're paying bills. People don't realize we do pay bills all year. It's not just like you set the budget once and you're done. And it's also shifting money between accounts. But one of the big things we're preparing for is federal impacts on funding. So we put some money into healthy HIC, Healthy Incentive for Children, and a number of different related programs, including the Medicare, well, the Medical Health Trust Fund, Medical Care Fund, which can help back up Medicaid, as well as a number of other programs. One of the ones that we actually put more money into this cycle that is a little surprising, but not surprising, is the RAFT, Residential Assistance Transition from Family Fund. This is the money we use to help people who lose their homes, or lose their rent, lose a bit of wherever they're living, and then we provide transitional assistance. It also helps with vouchers because we actually have corresponding vouchers with the state, which is the MSRDP. Helps people to see if they can get access to those programs, access to public housing, access to any other form of programs out there. and also provide some temporary support. We put about $42 million in that program. This shows that the economy is shifting. When we have to put money mid fiscal year into these types of health and human service programs, such as food and healthcare and housing, it shows the economy is shifting a bit.
So, speaking of healthcare tech, I just not too long ago chatted with Beth Anstrolo from QCAP, and she's very concerned about the potential loss of federal funds for MassHealth.
Oh, that is very real. I mean, Congress right now is talking about cost shifting Medicaid to the states. This is actually part of the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, is they're trying to find ways to pay for stuff they want to pay for, at the same time cut taxes, which again, this is a very Republican proposal. They always love to cut taxes, spend more money, and then try to find ways and claims that, this is economic stimulus. It doesn't work. Look at our economics have been tried. It doesn't work. We've been here before. But you want to create tax policies to actually stimulate businesses to be able to reinvest more into their own businesses to develop and grow. That's what good tax policy should be. And tax policy should be designed around benefiting the largest part of the population that has the most spending power. Basically, the other 75% of the population that is uber wealthy, or less than 0.1%. But I mean, we all know that the economy is driven not by the super wealthy. It's driven by you and I. Listening and talking here makes the economy work. And we get pinched, the whole economy suffers. So, but that's just my opinion. But yeah, no, it's just talk about cost shift. And I think we talked about this last time, and I think it was my third conversation here with you on this is cost shift. And we have massive fear of cost shifting, things like Medicaid and Medicare, which is what we call MassHealth. As well as, for example, getting rid of Section 8 housing vouchers, no longer supporting federally funded public housing. The Housing Authority wisely bought essentially the federal housing in Germantown, putting under the Quincy Housing Authority purview. But that's not the case, throughout the state. Some of the public housing is still owned by the feds. The Low Income Heating Assistance Program is supplemented by the state, but it's primarily funded by the federal government. It impacts us, particularly in the Northeast and other cold weather states. And a lot of states I like to refer to as federal welfare states. They have no taxes, high dependent on services, especially with the federal government, and there's a massive cost shift. States that have no income taxes are going to get really, really badly banged up because they can't back up the feds. And of course, their congressional people want to stop blaming Democrats, immigrants, people of color, aliens. I mean, they got to blame anybody but themselves for their behavior, saying we gave you a tax cut through who, but I'm sorry, you just lost your food benefits.
It's a real issue. It's a real concern. I know that the state delegation here in Massachusetts, of course, is fighting against that. However, they're up against a majority in the Senate right now.
Well, I give credit to our local Congress people as well as our set U.S. Senate delegations regarding the fact that trying to hold people accountable as the minority party. I mean, Bill Keating, there's a video out there of Bill Keating actually just going right into Rubio, doing a subcommittee review regarding the State Department. And those who know Bill is also former district attorney. Homeland Security is one of the committees that he's been on for a very long time, and very concerned about not necessarily the behavior of the feds regarding foreign affairs and how we treat immigrants and excuse me and visa holders, but how does it impact our ability to do homeland security? Because if our partners overseas aren't helpful, it creates a real problem regarding the war on terror. The objective of the war on terror is to get them overseas before they get over here to hurt us. And that is the philosophy of pretty much every country out there regarding the war on terror. You gotta take the fight to them, not wait for the fight to come to you. And this is not just an American philosophy. This is a philosophy of all first world countries, all the G20 countries, including countries like China. I mean, they secure the borders by getting to their terrorists in the corner. Same thing the Brits, the French, the Japanese. Everybody wants to combine their intelligence agencies to find these folks before they come find us. And it's crucial for that to occur. So I don't know how they're going to continue this relationship, which has become really hostile, regarding your and I, as well as other countries' domestic safety.
Yeah. Is it, would there ever be a possibility, do you think, of shifting the millionaire's tax over to Medicaid if possible?
No, because it requires a constitutional change. The Constitution requires it to be split in education and education, transportation. What you can do, which the advocate's going to hate, is that you could use some of the millionaire's tax as to fill out the baseline. So, for example, let's say in Chapter 70, we can't we sign up to get rid of the supplemental one-time costs or supplemental programs, for example. A very popular program, for example, I'm not going to say we're doing it, I'm just using an example. Let's say we decide that we need Chapter 70 to be fully funded, and we decide to stop the community college tuition program for new admittances. We don't take anyone new for the community college, free community college program for people over age 25. Instead, we use the money to build the baseline amount of Chapter 70 to keep it the formula going. That's something we could do if there's a huge budget shortfall or cost shift.
Okay. All right. Yeah. 'Cause I think I read not too long ago that revenue from that tax is far exceeding expectations.
Yeah, but we're only year two. I mean,
Right.
we'll find out in year 3 to 5, you know, how much money actually has left the state and how much is real moving and how much is fraudulent moving. Plus, of course, the economy is going to shift around. I mean, obviously, we live in a high cost area. As a result, we have a housing crunch as well as other related costs. But I mean, the stock market's been topsy-turvy. There'll be layoffs, and the tech industry is going through its cycle. The tech industry is a very strange economic cycle where they'll lay off 5% of their workforce in a heartbeat. And then after like 4 years, they'll rehire that 5% as new technology and economy turns. We'll see how it holds out. I do believe that, you know, smaller employers are hanging on to employees longer, hoping to ride out the next essentially 2 months into this tariff war scenario, if there is no kind of conclusion down the road on reducing tariffs, that you could see start more main street job reduction, which for you and I and all of us listening is going to have a much greater impact.
Yeah, uncertainty is definitely the key word when it comes to talking about the economy and jobs, at least for the short term.
Agreed. You know, the job numbers are still good in the macro level, but people staying on unemployment is going longer. That's the number you got to watch out for. It's not the new unemployment applicants, it's how long people stay. The length of stay is largely reflective of what the job market is looking like. We've enjoyed essentially well into 3 years now of very low number of people staying on unemployment. They're able to find work in a fairly reasonable period that creates that steady number. We'll see how it plays out in the next 3 months.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That will be the key to watch for sure. We're also not, we've talked about this before, but I'm actually seeing gas prices rise.
I am still freaked out by this. We've talked about this for basically four consecutive times now on this call with you. And I'm still very clueless on this. I don't understand. I mean, the Saudis are right now pumping oil like mad. They've done the opposite of what they've done in the past. They've actually increased oil production. And for those who don't realize, oil-rich countries' populations are heavily subsidized by the government because they make so much money in oil. It basically supports their entire economy and their social services and you know all their infrastructure, the benefits people enjoy in places in Saudi Arabia, places like Saudi Arabia, it's oil-driven money. So like good schools, good roads, social services, huge ass safety nets. I mean, just monster amount of services they get because it makes so much money in oil. So it's in their best interest to raise oil prices as much as possible because it benefits the population, not just the Saudi royalty. The Saudis have been shifting away from oil to renewables and diversified investment accounts because they know that there's a finite amount of oil and the world is shifting away. So they're getting ready to shift their economy as well to be more of a technology slash intellectual beneficial hub, and to release some of the social restrictions on people, on quality of life to attract foreigners to come in because foreigners don't want to live under certain restraints regarding the social, cultural functions. So,
Right.
but this is very peculiar because they're going to pump out like 2 million barrels more a day. And the thing that hurts the Saudis is shale. And I don't like how shale is done. Shale is very dirty on how it handles it on soil. But the US shale production makes us number one in terms of oil output, which makes us actually a domestic exporter. We export more oil than we actually utilize. We export a lot of natural gas than we utilize. So we're actually a net exporter of energy on fossil fuels. So, we have an overproduction problem going on. And the Saudis are realizing that OPEC partners are not following the rules because they come to an agreement and nobody's obeying them, especially the Russians. So I mean, if they pump more oil in the system and they're basically 50% of OPEC, they're hoping to drive all the prices down against the OPEC partners, as well as the United States shale industry, to drive the shale industry into a non-cost-effective situation, which reduces their production, force other countries because other OPEC countries, also very dependent on oil in their economy to support their social programs, or in the case of Putin, the war,
Yeah.
to try to punish them. And we'll see how this works. It's going to take about 2 months to see how the Saudi plan to try to like just drive down prices more to negatively impact the U.S. production and beat up their neighbors and partners, so to speak. It's a different type of price war that we don't experience because we are not a part of OPEC, and our share production and stuff like that for oil and natural gas and other things is not really meant as a weaponization against other folks. Although we have now self-weaponized because the Canadians are going to make our fuel more expensive because we're going to tariff Canadian oil, which then creates more expensive fuel. So it's more like self-destructive behavior regarding energy. But we are a net exporter of power of fossil fuel. So most people don't realize that. Next 2 or 3 months, we'll see what happens. Gas prices, bumped up 5 cents locally in the last week. I'm
Yeah.
paying attention. Some points have gone up to $3, much to my absolute shock. Given the fact that oil is still floating between $59 and $62.
Yeah, that's right. That hasn't changed much, actually. I mean, there may have been a little bit of an increased demand due to the Memorial Day holiday, but not a lot.
But even if you, let's say we just factor in, let's say 25% tariffs, I mean, it still should have some reduction. I mean, it won't be the same level, but even if you factor in tariff calculations, it should still go down, even if it's or at least stabilized, not go up.
Right.
So I'm very baffled. I'm very
Yeah.
baffled still.
Okay. Well, just another big question mark in the economic world these days.
Well, part of the Trump policy is to bring down a fuel prices to address inflation. For us at home, to us, fuel prices really mean gasoline. It's the one that's more visible. It has a sign up front. And those of us who have gas cars know what it is, right? Conversely, people in electric cars, right, use their home charging. And yes, electric cars does increase your electric bill as part of the cost. But I mean, when you all open up your electric bill, you can see the increased costs on electrical prices are not regarding
Yeah.
the generation component, the electrical generation, not the transmission or distribution. And you can look at your bill going back several months because actually show you how much energy you use. We'll see what the summer brings because in New England in particular, we're high electric usage once we hit the months of July and August because we like to stay cool, which can put a lot of pressure on the grid. In the winter months, we're high natural gas consumers because again, it gets really cold, right?
Yeah.
Although this year was again another odd winter, but we had some really cold days.
Oh, exceptionally cold winter, yeah.
Yeah, so it creates a lot of pressure on the natural gas system, and we're declining home heating oil. I think we're under 20% and still dropping using home heat, which then squeezes the remaining folks in home heating oil because the changes kind of the price demand on that front. So, we'll see how this goes. But I mean, one of the big promises from the Trump administration is loyal, I'm sorry, lower energy prices. But I mean, gasoline is easily the most visible one out there.
Absolutely, yeah, and at the same time, there's talk of eliminating the energy assist the LIHEAP program, right? Low income heating energy assistance. There's
It's
words.
a LIHEAP program, which I
Yeah.
mentioned earlier. Yeah, I mean, it's about it's a big program in the winter months. It actually goes right into April. The
Yeah.
state will do a supplemental in December or January if there's a sign that this is going to run out of money. We've supplemented as high as $20 million in the past. If we have to pick up the boat, it could be twice as much depending on the winter we face.
Yeah. All things to consider and worry about going forward for sure.
Well, it's not new. I mean, we already
No.
face this of ARPA. I mean, when the feds start pulling back a lot of the federal money, again, my favorite example is universal school breakfast and school lunches for children in public schools. Biden administration just yanked the rug under us on that one. And we decided that is a good public policy and a lot of different reasons, many good reasons. And we are now supporting as part of our baseline budget. None of us could anticipate, what the feds are going to start pulling back in other programs. Which then affects how we approach our baseline budget. But like I said, it's one of my more prouder public policies to support on that. But I remind folks that, regardless of which president, I tend to be much more objective about it. I could care less who is in power. I care about what they're going to do to us as a state.
Right. Yeah. No, right. Exactly. Absolutely. And then it's, varies from administration to administration.
Oh yeah, I mean, they're not all angels and they're not all jerks. It's just, both any political party in the presidency, they're gonna create policies that impact us as state officials. We actually have to kind of react and respond if there's something that impacts us, as well as people like Beth Ann Strolla at QCAP regarding their public policies, right? We supplement Head Start. Head Start is a federal policy. Head Start is a policy from George H. Bush. That's how long Head Start's been around, right? That was a Republican-led policy. Right. So, if I remember correctly. So, I tend to be much more objective and realistic about this stuff than just sitting here bashing folks. I do bash people both ways because, their dumbass comes my direction.
Were you surprised, Tacky, that the governor is ending the hotel shelter program this year?
No, the migrant issue has been declining since the late fall of last year. The fact that they shut down the Welcome Center at Eastern Nazarene, not just because Eastern Nazarene was sold, but Bay State Community Services. I did visit the location. It's not nearly as big as it was at Eastern Nazarene. And the word is that by end of June, most of the Welcome Centers will be closed, and they should be done, completely done by end of summer.
Wow. Okay. But the program itself is still in existence, right? The sheltering program.
The sheltering program is always existence. The right
Yeah.
to shelter program has always existed. As I kind of pointed out earlier in this talk about the RAF program, right? The fact we're increasing funding RAF shows there's a shift in economy, meaning people are
Yeah.
staying on unemployment longer, which creates a housing crisis, which is largely domestic. There is still an active rumor going around, which none of us can substantiate because we keep asking for data for the administration regarding who isn't into shelter program. How many different stream residents or legal residents in Massachusetts versus migrants? And they've not been forthcoming with that number still, which is frustrating members of the legislature. We've actually filed a language in the last shelter funding bill to include like data. We need to see your data. And they've been very resistant to that at this administration. So we're not happy about that. We really are not. And we're kind of a wits end what to do. But the reality is that the shelter program is slowing down regarding the migrant issue. We are still providing support to find migrants jobs or get them out of the state if they got someplace to go. But the Welcome Center is legitimately slowing down. I mean, the number of people coming in is much smaller. And the fact that we're preparing to shut down the Welcome Centers entirely by end of summer is an indication that migration has been slowing down. And again, it's been slowing down since last year before the Trump administration came in. The trickle has been proven true that it's been a gradual decline. It wasn't like, maybe it's a decline and you have a bump up, right? It'll do a V. That isn't the case. It is a slide down. But conversely, as economy shifts, human services need like unemployment, which is a federal program, by the way, food stamps or EBT, raft housing, those programs are going to go up, are going up now. Those programs were never consumed by migrants. Those programs are domestic. So pretty much, Massachusetts residents and legal residents have been accessing those programs.
Okay. So, yeah, it's definitely an indication of folks changing their finances, if nothing else, and reprioritizing, it sounds like.
Well, the Memorial Day is coming gone. The next big one's July 4th. July 4th is on a Friday, which
Yeah.
people like to, work out the vacation time before or after July 4th so they can maximize the vacation time. And we'll see what's going on. I mean, we should be having some figures regarding air travel. I, again, this past weekend got texts and emails from Expedia and Bookings.com telling me that they'll give me another credit if I book by end of June, some kind of travel. And Booking's like, we're going to give you 10% in credits, booking credits, if you do something by end of June. And Expedia gave me $25 credit if I book to June. This is not a good sign, people. When you're being offered money to utilize their system, it's never a good sign. I love a good deal. I love a good bargain. I love to find coupons, as you all know. But when industry is literally offering you money or credits to utilize it, that's bad. It's like when you see more buy one, get ones. It's like when you see trivia nights at bars.
Just trying to get people in to spend some money, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Any kind of time you see discount food, it's a sign of a economic shift. And discretionary spending generally means no purchase of large products, especially electronics, cars. Unless you actually need an item that's large, you won't do it. People start cutting back on things like eating out. People push out longer maintenance. For example, hair cutting, you extend it by an extra week, for example, right? I mean, people will start really crunching down that level. Some people will crunch down that level. I don't know, who they are, but it probably will. And
Right.
they also will start using more brand names, or as opposed to, I'm sorry, non-brand name goods
Yeah.
as brand name goods. And they'll leave some stuff on the shelf behind that, they normally would get. I mean, I've been leaving stuff behind unless I see a great sale, and some things that I enjoy too.
Yeah, and unfortunately too, a lot of folks have to turn to credit cards, just to get the essentials.
Yeah, I'm not looking at credit card debt lately. I think it was at $1 trillion at the beginning of the year. I have doubtful that that's gone down. Credit card and Fortress has become a big part of our life, not just because you want points or cash back or whatever your credit card usage is, but because people are taking flex loans. And it's like Affirm and others that live on these flex loan programs. So, for example, I have a Citibank MasterCard. And certain, it'll, if I go on a website and look at my credit card bill, it will say these are eligible for 4 monthly payments, flex loans. And obviously, a credit card company wants to continue to use their cards. So they're trying to create as many ways as possible for you to continue to use the card by creating these flex loans and very specific items. People, if you're wise, could probably use this to your benefit if you really do the math carefully and realize that you could stretch your dollar. Other folks may see that as a easy out and find themselves in more trouble.
Right, because beware the interest rate. Be sure about that before you do anything.
Yeah, I don't see the Feds lowering short-term interest rates anytime soon. And because it's still so unclear the economic picture, you may have heard stories in the news about bond yields going up. The rule is that when in the secondary market, people are selling their bonds like mad. The U.S. it creates the bond yield to go up because then the how do I put this? How do I explain this easily? If you got a bond that is, let's use for example, that's $1,000 bond at 5%, that means you're going to get $50 back. Every they give you $50 back like every year or whatever. It's right. But if you sell that bond for $900, it doesn't change the $50 return to you. As a result, it goes from 5% division to a higher percentage because someone bought the bond at a lower face value.
Right.
The payment interest payment doesn't change. It's still that 5% against 1,000, but because they bought it at a $100 cheaper rate, It's not 5% anymore. It's actually higher,
Yep.
which is how come you hear the word selling bonds creates higher interest rate. It's not because the federal government did anything on interest rates. It's because people buying bonds at discount, which then, since the interest is fixed and you bought it at a cheaper price, the interest rates go up, which means in the open market, it creates a higher pressure. Why is this bad? It's bad because when the federal government, to fund its monstrous deficit, issues new bonds, it's competing against the secondary market interest rate, which then forces the federal government to take bids for those bonds, which would be higher than the secondary market.
Which damages the secondary market, yeah.
Well, it actually, yeah, also damage your it damages the federal government.
Right.
So, I mean, what should have been, for example, a 30-year bonds closing at is it 20 or 20 years closing at 5%? I think it's 30 or two. So it's like 4.9, whatever, right? Closing
Yeah.
5%. If I'm the US Treasury and I'm going to issue, because Secretary Betts is going to issue bonds here for the federal deficit to fund the government, you know, they're going to issue a 30-year bond, for example. Well, if the secondary market is now, you know, buying bonds at close to 5%, that means when it goes to the auction, you know, people are going to be saying, I want 5.25%.
Yeah, exactly. And that just drives it up. Yeah.
And that drives up the treasuries. So you as taxpayers are going to have to pay more because of the fact that, you know, the interest rates has gone up against the auctions when they put
Right.
out the auction. The secondary concern is that when there's a lot of selling, is that the people losing, two things are happening. One, the people losing faith in the US ability to
Right.
pay that. But secondly, people need money. People don't talk about that part. So one, oh yeah, the people losing faith in the US government debt and ability to pay debt. I'm like, okay, that's fair. But it also means you need cash now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, why is that? Because it's cost more to live.
Yeah, you're getting pinched. So, you know, the rule is that if your interest rates are higher than inflation, you're beating inflation.
Right.
When it's the other way, you're not beating inflation,
You're losing every day. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
which is the era of low interest rates. So,
Right.
wage growth above inflation compensated for the low interest rates back in the mid-teens. So this is kind of this weird economic lesson that all of us are learning on the fly in the past year, especially now in the Trump's administration, creating so much economic uncertainty that, you know, two things are happening. People are having perhaps having less faith in the US to pay their debt. And secondly, you need money now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh boy, talk about a lesson in economics.
Yeah, it takes a little while to learn this. And you know, I'm not your financial advisor, so I'll repeat again over and over again, talk to your financial advisor what you know works best for you in this volatile environment. You know, people like myself is sufficiently young enough to just ride the wave, but some of you are in a different economic situation, and you know, and don't panic. That's why you have financial advisors.
Exactly.
Call them before you do anything. Just call them and get some advice before you do anything. I think that's what I always say over and over again. Don't get into the panic and just call for some sound help.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Great advice for sure. Yeah. So you have
We have frozen. I got bars.
yeah, your video's frozen. I can still hear you though. Oh, you're
Yeah,
back.
you're, there we go. I got. Oh no, I just came up unstable. I actually have good bars until it just told me now I don't. Waving hands. That's
Yep,
my
I
thing.
see you. Yep, it's working. Yeah. Okay, I guess we're okay.
So, I mean, we'll see how the economy goes, Joe. I mean, the economy is, you know, very much at the whims of the president and his ability to do social media posts. And the last consumer price index survey showed that consumers, not consumer price index, consumer survey, last consumer survey actually was higher than expected. However, when they surveyed individual consumers like you and me, the word is that they're hopeful that the tariff issue will have a resolution sometime in July and August, which creates consumer confidence on purchasing. So that's how much infiltration that tariffs have infiltrated people's minds. It's like interest rates infiltrated people's minds last year. The media has really banged it into people's heads with the impact on tariffs, which now has even affected how they respond to consumer service.
Yeah, nobody. I never partook in one of those surveys. I don't know if you ever have. I'm always wondering who these people are that are being surveyed, and how do I get in on the survey?
I'm actually curious too. I don't know. It's a University of Michigan survey that's pretty much accepted as the national standard. The CPI, Consumer Price Index, is actually the Federal Reserve sending human beings into markets all over the country, actually recording down prices, gas prices, egg prices, actually write them down and then report back the information. And they do it in very specific time frames. So they're all gauged within a very specific time period in diverse communities, meaning they go into rural communities as well as urban communities and try to find the average.
I see. Interesting. Yeah, I always wondered about that. It's very curious to see these surveys that we hear about, but nobody ever participates in.
I agree with you. But I mean, again, I mean, I've been monitoring those surveys since COVID, because obviously during COVID we had all kinds of economic disruption, and the surveys have been all over the board in the past year, spiking and dropping as quickly as they do month by month. So consumer uncertainty creates, as we said earlier, consumer spending is largely uncertain, and the nature of my chairmanship has me monitoring this stuff much more than I normally would. Because I get a lot of different consumer-related bills, especially things associated with fees, as well as other consumer protection-related issues of fear of gouging. I'm keeping an eye on this stuff. And of course, you guys don't know how I watch the alcohol industry. Alcohol industry is in decline at the moment for many reasons. Tariffs are just going to compound the decline, the alcohol industry for now. We'll see how it works because there's a lot of jobs associated with it.
No, for sure. Yeah, it's not just at the retail level. It's a wholesale. It's delivery. It's production. It's a big area. Farming even.
Yeah, and we don't sales tax alcohol in Massachusetts because the voters repealed that in 2010. So that means it's totally excise tax driven. And we haven't changed the excise tax since the early 70s.
Oh, is that right? Wow. What is
Yeah,
what's the rate now?
it's by gallonage.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So like beer is actually the cheapest one, spirits the highest one. So the higher volume you sell by gallon means a lower excise. Smaller, higher end products, which is lower gallonage, is higher price. Don't ask me off the top of my head because it's a multi-tier system, meaning there's seven or eight different excise taxes depending on the product we're talking about.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, interesting. Okay, something else to think about. I know you mentioned you have a couple of public hearings coming up. Is it related to that?
We already did alcohol a couple of weeks back. We have two public hearings scheduled in the month of June. June 2nd actually is the next one. June 14th is our one after that. Actually, after I'm done with this call with you, I'm having a staff call regarding putting together a proposal for the next set of hearings to send to my Senate co-chair to see what their thoughts are, and proceed from there. So the second hearing schedule set, the 14th, and then I think it's the second week in July. After that, and then I think the last week in July, then we take August off, then it's 2 weeks in September, it's 2 weeks in October, and one scheduled in November. But we, obviously we can add more hearings if we. So we have a lot of we have a lot going on trying to make this scheduling work. We got a little bit of a late start, and then obviously got to report bills out. Plus, you obviously have the budget and other supplemental budgets, and then we'll see what other major agenda items come up from both leadership teams on the House and the Senate that starts popping bills out. So it's a bit of a I won't say it's difficult, but I'm just saying it's the scheduling is a problem. So
The juggling act, it sounds like,
I love to say I have enormous freedom and no freedom at all. I have a lot of freedom on how to manage my time, but I have no freedom regarding the legislative schedule. That is complete discretion of the speaker. So, some of you may not be aware, I took some time off in February. I had to fly back early because it took some time for school vacation week. I was hoping to get into the next week's vacation week, take some time off. We had a session set up called for Tuesday. Actually, turned out to be two sessions that week. So, I had to fly back early. So, I had to change all my vacation plans to get back here. It turned into a flight delay of 15 hours. I was very worried I was going to get back to work on time now because there's a mechanical fear regarding missing parts in the plane, which again does not create consumer confidence. Oh, it was horrible. I was having a horrible time getting home. Horrible. Because I was legit afraid that I probably could miss the session. And I was giving myself 48 hours to get actually more like 72 in the end to get back to home ahead of vacation schedule, ending my vacation early to get the decision. I literally was sitting like, I'm literally giving myself almost 3 days and I still could miss the session because of a tiny mechanical problem. So as I say over and over again, you guys rely only on my attendance on the roll call sheets in the house that actually showed up, and we're required to vote in person in the house. We can't remote call. I can vote for my desk if I'm severely ill. We talked about this during the budget when I had got off with chest code. I was wearing a mask in the quarantine in my office. My staff wouldn't even come see me. I was that sick. But I mean, I started to go up to the chamber to show signs of life, meaning that I'm here. And they basically threw me out of the chamber once they heard me gagging. And they're like, keep away, leave the room now, go back to your office. Your Rule 49 for voting from your office has not been activated. Call you, don't we'll call you when you got a problem. So yeah, I mean, we are required to show up in the state house to vote. So I mean, yeah, I had this like panic attack in February. I'm like, I can't, because you don't know, you guys don't know how to plane delay, right? It's not like a roll call record. Tacky Chan is missing because his plane flight they
No, that doesn't get reported, right?
took almost 3 days almost to try to get back early. I mean, it was a 24-hour experience, and it turned into.
Hey, speaking of travel, have you heard anything about how tourism's going this year?
Oh, it's going to be a nightmare.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, I mean, the scholars weakened, but not weakened enough. Travel advisories from Canada, England, and Germany, they're advising a travel advisory against the United States for domestic travel. They're actually increased customs review of Europeans, not just people from Latin America or Asia visiting. As you saw this week, they revoked student visas at Harvard. That's a lot harder than it sounds, to be honest with you. It's not a simple process. People think, oh, well, just re it's like revoking a driver's license. Th this isn't how that works. It's much more than that. Because you have international agreements with other countries, which means they can retaliate against US students and deport them back too. But again, it becomes a nightmare with the schools administratively. It's a whole thing. And then, they announced this week they're going to more heavily scrutinize student visa applications. To visit to come to US schools. I get it. I mean, let's be, what's a reasonable amount of time of a delay too? I mean, because the scrutiny increase means delay time. So what is considered reasonable delay time? Review. Now, what does this mean? Well, you lose tourist money. I mean, the state is a area of about 60 to 80,000 students per year, including upperclassmen. Graduation season's hot right now. Flying in from Hawaii to see her grandchild's graduation, which I'm hosting them on Monday at the State House because Hawaii and she's in her 90s. And, as you guys know, your time is short. I want them to have a good time when they visit me. Good host. So, I mean, that's money. I know they're coming from Hawaii, but if you're coming in from England or Canada, but any Asian countries or any other European locations, I mean, that's money being spent here where they pay sales tax and we don't have to return the money. And this is going to be a problem if there's a decline of students as adverse effect for all schools around the country, which then, college towns are very dependent on income, such as a place like Amherst. And they're not the only one. A place like Syracuse, there's a lot of schools around the country that, basically kind of revolves around students. Find even of 10 or 15%, it's going to have a huge impact on those local economies. And then there could be retaliation. So you could find yourselves that US students can't go overseas.
Great.
And
Okay.
these families, some families are very dependent in the sense that maybe your kid got a scholarship to go to a very good school in another country, perhaps a European country or Asian country. And now your finances are completely screwed up because those countries retaliated. This isn't as simple as saying, revoking a driver's license. There are consequences here. The consequences are real to real families in the United States as well as overseas.
It's the things that don't get talked about or don't are not thought about when you take swift blanket action.
Well, I mean, you talk to like a coffee shop or a burger shop, let's say by BC. They support, BC students. I mean, realistically speaking, I mean, that's why they're there. That
Chicago's
business.
history for that school, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of the name of the place that has the 5 pound burger challenge. I mean, it's a real thing. But I mean, it's kind of part of the baseline. It's like the pizza shops, the consignment stores in Amherst Center. They're designed around UMass
Right.
Amherst College Valley, right? You go around the country. I mean, we live in the east side of the state. We live in the greater Boston area. But even though Quincy, Hedonah has the NAS anymore and we won't have Quincy College, UMass Boston students are important because they'll use the facilities in Quincy.
Sure.
They want to try to fight their way in Boston, particularly all the diversity of shops and restaurants we have down here.
Right.
And they actually have international students too. Quincy College has some international
Oh,
students.
yes, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, this trickle down to us, sure. I mean, they use the MBTA. They pay sales taxes, right? They pay meals taxes, right? If they have a part-time job in Massachusetts, if their visa allows for it, that's income tax for us.
Right. And those businesses employ people that live here, yeah.
That's exactly it. So, people think it's not a big deal. It is a big deal when you're like me, starting to think about the wider impact. I mean, I told this. One of the things I did in June, May, my very busy May, included talking to Massachusetts Retailers Association, and it brought up the issue regarding student visas and tourism. And sadly, I was right because a week later, the administration started doing these things with visas. And if you're a retailer in Massachusetts, you should be very concerned, as well as a restaurant and other industries. Yeah, I mean. This time of year is a big year for tourism because of graduation season. If
Right.
this continues the way you see it today, this fall time when people are doing school visits, they stay for a day or two, depending where you're. Well, mostly will stay at least one day, but some will stay two or three if you're from a foreign country because they're visiting multiple schools, using local services. You're going to lose that income in the fall, and then come graduation season next May, it'll be like COVID. Remember. It was probably not as bad as COVID. COVID means, nobody was here using Massachusetts service
Right.
in 2020. But, you could see a variation of that impact, probably
Yeah.
not 100%, but you could probably see like an 80% as opposed to 100% utilization.
Yeah, noticeable. Noticeable for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're going to feel it. So
Yeah.
somebody listening to the call here is like, oh, it doesn't affect me. Yeah, it may not. But in the bigger picture, it does affect me because it affects me and it affects the state and affects our ability to plan. It affects cities and towns, meals tax streams. It affects
Yep.
your friend that may have a small business that caters to students.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a simple issue, and not and again, it's not uniquely Massachusetts. This is a national, will be a national problem.
Right. I know your staff is probably clamoring to get a hold of you, so we'll let folks know how to get a hold of you here.
Yeah, staff calls next. 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370. Lovely hybrid working, which I am doing. We're in room 42. I am scheduled to be in quite a few days, actually, starting next week in June. But yeah, room 42. Even if I'm not there, please do come visit and say hello. Tacky.chan@emahouse.gov. I'm getting a lot of email right now. Testimonies coming in hot and heavy. I mean, before I got a call, I was trying to filter through 25 emails to show up in 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm afraid to go back to email now. At Tacky Chan, one of my social media accounts, State Representative Tacky Chan on Facebook. You can see I have my summary coming and goings. TackyChan@org. We're going to have an intern work on a facelift. Finally, I keep talking about this facelift. I've been told that one of our interns is going to take a look at that as a resource page. MALegislature.gov. Again, every single time I'm with you, very much encourage people to go to MALegislature.gov, set up an account there, monitor bills and hearings and sessions on your own. Love you to do that. Of course, me and Joe, every week or 2 weeks, I'm talking about whatever comes to mind at the day. Exactly. And check with y'all in the morning with 10-minute overview of news. And you got a quite burning question, let Joe know. And then we'll. we'll slip into one of the programs down the road.
For sure. Thanks so much, Jackie. Feel better.
Thank you, Joe. I'll talk to you soon.